Audiobook of Håkan Blomqvist's Esotericism and UFO Research. Made from the open PDF book from 2017. Upreading here can be followed by downloading the book, which is open or free online per June of 2017, when this is made. Introduction. In 2013 my book, Return of the Gods, UFOs and the Esoteric Tradition, was published. To my knowledge, this was the first extensive study of how ideas and assertions in the esoteric tradition has influenced the UFO movement, both from a scholarly and esoteric perspective. But it was also an attempt to formulate a variant of the esoteric intervention theory, presented by Jacques Vallée in several books and articles. As the book was only published in Swedish, several of my many friends and UFO research colleagues around the world urged me to make an English translation. About a year ago I did begin translating the manuscript, but soon discovered that so much additional interesting data had come my way since 2013 that I abandoned the idea. Instead I decided to publish a compilation of some of the relevant blog entries about UFOs and esotericism written 2013 to 2017. This compilation is only a selection and more data can be found on my blog, UFO Archives Blogspot say. As I have not changed anything in the blog entries, there will naturally be much repetition in the compilation. But I hope this study will be of interest and compensate readers who had hoped for a translation on my book. To make reading easier, I have arranged the blog entries in 7 main headings, but they are not in publishing sequence, which may, in some instances, be a bit confusing. I would like to express my deep gratitude to all friends and research colleagues worldwide who have provided much new data, encouragement and help in several ways. Håkan Blomqvist. Or Ebro. Sweden, June 2017. 1. The Esoteric Tradition. The Problems in Introducing Esotericism. The student or interested reader who for the first time, in books or on the internet, begins searching for information on esotericism or the esoteric tradition will be faced with a plethora of conflicting claims and seemingly endless stream of fanciful and fantastic messages from ascended masters. Scientifically and philosophically educated students soon realize that the naive platitudes and simple mysticism presented in much of this literature is of little interest, except to scholars of religion or cultural history. The problem is that hidden in this mass of popular occultism and mysticism there is to be found a treasure trove of knowledge and wisdom of a very different quality. A profound philosophy and science of the multiverse that should be of interest to every intellectual, humanist and academic scholar looking for a worldview and life view that can present relevant and reasonable answers to the deeper existential questions not given by orthodox theology, science or philosophy. Furthermore, this science of the multiverse or paradigm is a useful tool as a working hypothesis to the investigator of UFO and paranormal phenomena. A complicating factor, even for those students who have found the philosopher's stone, is the difference in the level or quality of presentation given by different authors. To my knowledge, the best and intellectually most articulate introduction to the ancient wisdom is written by the Swedish esotericist Henry T. Lawrence. In his writings, he often laments the mistakes made when esotericism was first publicly introduced to humanity, beginning in 1875 with the Theosophical Society. After 1875, esoteric facts have been publicized. But just very few of these facts have yet been put into their right contexts. Loose facts are worthless and too few facts will easily be misleading. It is very deplorable that this secret knowledge, at its first appearance, was given such an abortive presentation. The various theosophical attempts at esoteric worldview are incomplete to the extent of being misleading, Sinnet and Judge, or all too one-sided, Leadbeater, to meet the demands of intellectuals for an all-sided mental system. It is true that Blavatsky publicized a great number of esoteric facts, but she did not bother to put them into comprehensible contexts. Her writings, Isis Unveiled and The Secret Doctrine, are certainly gold mines of facts, more resembling voluminous encyclopedias, but are largely inaccessible for those who have not acquired a system. Her inability to find a terminology suitable for Western language usage makes it even more difficult to study her writings. The concepts used must be clearly defined. They must be of Western language and scientific mode of presentation. If you want to give knowledge to people, you must do it in such a manner that they are able to comprehend it. Instead, there was a monstrous mixture of symbolic sayings and unintelligible terminology with Sanskrit words already misunderstood. For the novice in esoteric studies, it is important to have a clear understanding of the source of this knowledge, to realize who are the actual custodians of the ancient wisdom. Although they are far ahead of humanity in general in the evolution of consciousness and belong to the next or fifth kingdom in nature, they are no hazy spooks in the astral world but most of them men and women, presently incarnated in physical bodies working together in a hidden or secret organization that has been given various names in literature: planetary hierarchy, inner government, white brotherhood, elder brothers, great white lodge. The Tibetan adept DK, who is the official secretary and organizing contact man of this organization, made this statement in one of the books dictated to his amanuensis Alice Bailey: "We who watch and guide on the inner side, watch with loving care all of you who struggle in the thick of the fray. We are like the general headquarters staff who follow the course of the battle from a secure eminence." Another important fact to consider is that this organization has since 1775 made plans to reveal of their knowledge for the benefit of humanity, and also decided that from 1875, as a test, disclose the fact of their, hitherto unknown, existence and work on our planet. Eventually they hope to be able to live openly in our society as teachers and guides to the mainstream intellectual and cultural elite. Immersed in and limited by the materialist, reductionist worldview, such ideas are anathema or irrational fantasies, unless they have entered the path of the scientific heretic and discovered that there is a forbidden science. In popular occultism, the members of the Planetary Guardians have often been presented in unrealistic and ridiculous ways, uttering meaningless platitudes to spiritist mediums and channelers worldwide. The critical and discerning student will immediately notice the difference in intellectual quality between these messages and the teachings presented in esoteric volumes. But we still have to contend with the limited knowledge, ability and idiosyncrasies of the authors in contact with and working together with members of the Planetary Guardians. Especially as the information is not always dictated but inspired in various ways. Alice Bailey is in this respect an interesting example. Although she physically met and corresponded with her teacher, the Tibetan DK, her books were dictated clairaudiently or often only inspired where Bailey used her own knowledge and terminology. As she early in life was a Christian missionary, many of her books use ideas and expressions from Christianity but with an esoteric explanation. This can be very confusing and frustrating at times, especially to readers with a scientific and critical mind who simply want the facts without Christian symbols or quotes from the Bible. Esotericist Henry T. Lawrence makes some critical comments on this problem when reading Alice Bailey. Everywhere the former Christian missionary shines through, who could never divest her mind from old Christian fictions and who makes this color her presentation. If A.A.B.S. intention was to meet with approval among Christians by using their terminology, she counteracts this effect by unnecessarily disclosing the import of the symbols and depriving these readers of quite a few cherished illusions and fictions. When A.A.B. speaks, it is now the esoterician speaking, now the Christian missionary who knows her Bible. This comment is not made to belittle the tremendous work done by Bailey but simply to explain the problems encountered by the teachers. The Tibetan is very well aware of these shortcomings regarding his amanuensis, and also that a new and more adequate terminology is badly needed in esotericism. The teachers belonging to the Planetary Guardians I have sometimes, in a humorous mode, referred to as the Higher Intelligence Agency, here. Theosophist Henry Steele Lockett, who knew several of them personally, often called them the boys. This attitude can be a useful antidote when confronted with the often ridiculously devotional literature attributed to the adepts. There is a quote regarding the lives of masters. In Alice Bailey's book The Externalization of the Hierarchy, that gives a good perspective of this issue. They will stand forth as living examples of goodwill, of true love, of intelligent applied wisdom, of high good nature and humor, and of normalcy. They may indeed be so normal that recognition of what they are may escape notice. I would here remind you that many of the masters are married and have raised families. Referring to the planetary guardians as the higher intelligence agency is in several respects an appropriate description, as their work in many ways resembles the activities of the global intelligence organizations. The elder brothers have their safe houses and are the custodians of an inaccessible library, archive and museum where the real history of our planet of sorrow can be studied. Possibly they also have a secret Vimana technology at their disposal. But most important of all, their work is a constant fight for the good, the true and the beautiful. In March 2009 I started this blog in Swedish and changed to the English language in March 2013. During the first 4 years, much new data on the history of the Swedish UFO movement, close encounter and contact cases was presented. This was combined with news from UFO, Sweden and AFU. In 2013 I presented a position statement on the blog, and my latest book was also published, Return of the Gods: UFOs and the Esoteric Tradition. Since 2013 I have increasingly focused on studies of the esoteric tradition as a valid theory or paradigm in relation to investigation of UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena. Esotericism as presented primarily by Helena Blavatsky, Charles Leadbeater, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence. Simply because in my view these authors represent the most interesting, scholarly and intellectual efforts to formulate esotericism as a science of the multiverse. A worldview that could be accepted as a working hypothesis by critical and scientifically minded scholars and researchers. I am of course aware of that by presenting myself as an esotericist among mainstream scientific ufologists is regarded by many as intellectual hierarchy or irrational hereticism. But my objective has never been to appear as ufologically correct, but simply to find the truth. In this respect I adhere to the motto of Riley Crabb, for many years director of Borderland Sciences Research Foundation: if I have one goal in life it is an uncompromising search for the truth, whatever that might be, and wherever it may lead. There are now so many blog posts where I have presented the esoteric interpretation of various UFO and paranormal phenomena, including the contactees of the 1950s, that I find further blogging on this theme not very meaningful. It would simply be repeating the same message with new data. Instead, I will concentrate on news on our AFU website. If and when I find new and interesting data relating to UFOs and esotericism, I will present them on this blog. So what have I essentially been trying to say in my books, articles and blog? Here is a brief summary of my basic points. UFO and paranormal phenomena challenges the materialist, reductionist paradigm. Most serious field investigators who have spent years documenting UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena sooner or later come to a point where they start asking themselves the basic question: what are the implications of all these phenomena? There are of course ufologists and Forteans who gather cases like stamp collectors, without bothering about paradigm issues or the scientific and philosophical challenges implied by the phenomena. But for investigators with a scholarly or intellectual approach, the various phenomena are usually the starting point of a lifelong search for the deeper existential questions. The field investigator of UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena who, after years of study and with a mass of empirical data, realizes that the reductionist, materialist worldview is untenable and a new paradigm or theory encompassing a multiverse must be formulated, face the dilemma of finding a reasonable and intellectually acceptable alternative working hypothesis. There is no ontology in ufology, as Jacques Vallée said in a recent speech. When faced with all the data on well-documented cases of UFO, Fortean and paranormal phenomena, most mainstream scientists retire into a materialist, reductionist cul-de-sac and simply deny the data. There are a few exceptions, researchers who become the cultural heretics of our time, entering the domain of the forbidden science. Esotericism as a working hypothesis for a science of the multiverse. Neither reductionist materialism nor orthodox religion has any tenable answers when faced with UFO and paranormal phenomena which clearly indicate a multiverse reality. If there is a multiverse inhabited by various sentient beings of different evolution and intelligence, there must also be a science of the multiverse. Which implies that it is reasonable to assume the existence of scientists of the multiverse or custodians of knowledge not discovered by mainstream science. This is the position maintained by the esoteric tradition or the ancient wisdom. I have found the esoteric worldview formulated by A.O. Helena Blavatsky, Charles Leadbeater, Alice Bailey and Henry T. Lawrence the intellectually most interesting alternative paradigm to be used as a working hypothesis when dealing with UFO and paranormal phenomena. It represents a third-way worldview between materialism or religion. The multiverse theory is today presented from different scientific disciplines, physics, astronomy, psychology, parapsychology, and since the 1970s it has been a prominent hypothesis among ufologists and 14s, John A. Keel, Jacques Vallée, Alan Hayek. This is an interesting cultural phenomenon. A sort of re-enchantment of the world advocated by scientists and scholars, instead of disenchantment, to use the terminology of sociologist Max Weber. But as John Keel so aptly remarked, this is mapping a very old country, a country for centuries studied in the esoteric tradition. Academic and scholarly interest in this heretic and forbidden science has seen a remarkable renaissance during the last decades. It has been realized that the esoteric tradition can be regarded as the third intellectual force or pillar in cultural history alongside religion and science. A detailed taxonomy of multiverse entities and phenomena. The writings of Jacques Vallée and John Keel made mainstream ufologists aware of the close resemblance between some UFO entities and the devas, nature spirits and elementals described in folklore and religion. According to the esoteric tradition, devas and nature spirits are a parallel evolution to man living at different levels of the multiverse. In the coming centuries we will, according to the esoteric tradition, become more conscious of each other's existence and be able to cooperate. The reappearance of the Fairy Investigation Society is an interesting cultural phenomenon pointing in this direction. A very fascinating and promising prophecy in esoteric literature is that within 100 years we will be able to photograph and film phenomena of the etheric world and other parts of the multiverse. If true, that would be the definite end of materialism as a mainstream academic worldview, as we would have definite, empirical evidence that we live in a multiverse. 2. Field investigators of UFO and paranormal phenomena. It would open up a totally new world of entities and phenomena. The Astral Plane, 1895, by Charles Leadbeater is, in my view, the most comprehensive and detailed taxonomy of non-human entities and phenomena from the multiverse perspective of the esoteric tradition. But also the books by Geoffrey Hodgson can be studied in this respect. The Esoteric Intervention Theory. Perhaps the most controversial of my writings is a variation of Jacques Vallée's Esoteric Intervention Theory. I have advanced the theory that some of the physical contactees of the 1950s were involved in a cultural influence test. An experiment implemented by a group of benevolent aliens, Earth-based or extraterrestrial, a group with access to the mana technology. This test was done in cooperation with the Higher Intelligence Agency, the custodians of the ancient wisdom, using a new type of phenomena as attraction, as they used spiritualist phenomena in connection with the founding of the Theosophical Society in 1875. A brief summary of my arguments for seriously considering this theory follows. 1. Many years of investigating and documenting physical contact cases have convinced me that some individuals, very few, have actually met and communicated with aliens from somewhere. 2. In spite of their faults and personality idiosyncrasies, there is circumstantial evidence that the following contactees were involved in a cultural and psychological test: George Adamski, Orfeo Angelassi, Daniel Fry, George Van Tassel, Howard Menger. 3. The contact experiences of journalist Paul M. Vest indicates that the test was a carefully orchestrated plan by this benevolent group. 4. The message or information presented to these contactees is a somewhat simplified version of the esoteric tradition with basic ideas such as a multiverse reality, reincarnation, universal laws for the evolution of consciousness, Earth the quarantine door, prison planet, man not alone in the universe, etc. In order to detect and understand the similarity in ideas between the contactee messages and esotericism, a thorough acquaintance with the works of Helena Blavatsky and Alice Bailey is required. Few ufologists have this background. 5. Their hidden hand. Similarities between the outbreak of spiritistic phenomena in the 19th century and UFO phenomena in the 1940s and 50s. In the esoteric tradition, this hidden hand is the planetary guardians, the custodians of the ancient wisdom, scientists of the multiverse, using phenomena to expand the worldview and consciousness of man, a form of education through astonishment. 6. The assertion, in the 1930s and 40s, by Alice Bailey's teacher, the Tibetan DK, that extraplanetary beings stand ready to intervene and offer their help at this time. I have often commented and speculated on the future of ufology and investigation of paranormal phenomena. Today, this type of research is a form of cultural luxury as the world situation is very unstable with wars, terrorism, organized crime, robber capitalism, social and political unrest, and a general brutalization and breakdown of culture and society. The naive UFO and New Age enthusiast ask, why don't the space people or planetary guardians come out openly to create a peaceful world? I believe the best answer to this question was formulated by the Venusian Bill in his conversation with journalist Paul M. Vest, upon Your Earther. Mere color of one's skin, a slight difference of religious belief, merely belonging to a different race or country. In fact, the most trivial deviations precipitate animalistic belligerencies, hideous brutalities, and the bloody slaughter of millions of your fellow creatures. Can you then truly be surprised when I tell you that the beings of certain other worlds view Earth as earthlings might look upon a den of deadly serpents stinging each other to death? If the world situation stabilizes and we avoid another world war, we can expect a continuing externalization of the hierarchy, as it is called in esotericism. Perhaps some new type of phenomena, revolutionary discoveries in science, and certainly some emissary from or individual associated with the planetary guardians or higher intelligence agency giving a new and scientifically updated version of the ancient wisdom, the science of the multiverse. This hopeful and benevolent conspiracy theory was beautifully formulated by Connie Menger, wife of Howard Menger, in her briefing in From Outer Space to You, p. 7. 8. Let us assume that there is on this planet a group of scientifically minded and spiritually dedicated men and women who are working to accomplish this great task, the spiritual renaissance of all people on the planet. And, let us further assume that they have already established contacts with equally dedicated people of other planets. To continue their work and remain effective, they must of necessity remain behind the scenes. However, they can, in the interest of humanity in general, send out hints as to what will take place in the near future. Perhaps they send out scouts to make personal contacts for the specific reason of determining the reactions of everyday people. Perhaps it is done as a smokescreen to temporarily keep secret the real work which is going on until such time that the people are prepared to meet this new era with many changes it will bring. Then there are the personal contact stories, some of which are authentic, and which have been established for study purposes and for keeping alive a story, which must eventually be brought before all people. If given in small doses, the general acceptance will be made over a period of time, and will take place almost naturally. Let us imagine, then, that this great work is being carried on by a universal group of men and women. There have been several friends and correspondents who have urged me to make an English translation of my latest book, Return of the Gods: UFOs and the Esoteric Tradition. Maybe I will in time, but readers who wish to study my theories and data in more detail can follow the links to different blog posts or search for keywords in the upper left corner of the blog. Henry Steele, Occult and Phenomena. For a few weeks, I have immersed myself in the fascinating diaries of Henry Steele Lockett, one of the founders and the first president of the Theosophical Society. Leaves in six volumes are a treasure trove of paranormal phenomena. I have often advised UFO colleagues to study the writings of the first-generation theosophists and compare them with the contactee literature. Ufologists will be surprised to find the same type of phenomena in both genres. Theosophy is contactee experiences minus the sources. And a good start is the first volume of Lockett's old diary Leaves, covering the period 1874-1878. Henry Steele Lockett, 1832-1907, was a lawyer, journalist and a pioneer in psychical research. He spent 12 weeks in 1874 investigating the materialization phenomena of the famous Eddy brothers in Chittenden, Vermont. This was 8 years before the foundation of the Society for Psychical Research in London, 1882. Lockett documented his research in a massive 492 pages opus, People from the Other World, 1875. Present-day theosophists reading old diary Leaves will probably be both surprised and shocked by the often very critical comments on Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and her character in the diaries. This is definitely no hagiography of the famous H.P.B., as she liked to be called. Lockett is unusually candid regarding both her faults and merits. Listen to this quote on Blavatsky's character, which one would rather expect from skeptical hardliners: so fitful, so capricious, so unreliable, so exacting, so tempestuous as to call for heroic forbearance and self-control if one would live and work with her in an unselfish spirit. P. 50, and Lockett gives several examples of these less admirable traits in his diary. Of course, he also gives many examples of the very good sides of Blavatsky. But what made this rather critical investigator of the paranormal endure living with Blavatsky and becoming her foremost co-worker? A large of the answer is obviously phenomena. His diaries are filled with all the various types of psychic experiences and phenomena he encountered both together with Blavatsky and alone. We can follow his thoughts and doubts about what is happening. But there was one particular early experience that was a sort of turning point in his theosophical career. It occurred in New York City, 1877. Our evening's work on Isis was finished. I had bade goodnight to H.P.B., retired to my own room, closed the door as usual, sat me down to read and smoke, and was soon absorbed in my book. All at once, as I read with my shoulder a little turned from the door, there came a gleam of something white in the right hand corner of my right eye. I turned my head, dropped my book in astonishment, and saw towering above me in his great stature an Oriental clad in white garments, and wearing a head cloth or turban of amber, striped fabric, hand, embroidered in yellow floss silk. Long raven hair hung from under his turban to the shoulders. His black beard, parted vertically on the chin in the Rajput fashion, was twisted up at the ends and carried over the ears. The presence was seated in the other chair beyond the table. He told me he had come at the crisis when I needed him, that my actions had brought me to this point, that it lay with me alone whether he and I should meet often in this life as co-workers for the good of mankind. Suddenly the thought came into my mind, what if this be but hallucination? What if H.P.B. has cast a hypnotic glamour over me? I wish I had some tangible object to prove to me that he has really been here. Something that I might handle after he is gone. The master smiled kindly as if reading my thought, untwisted the fata, turban, from his head, benignantly saluted me in farewell and was gone. His chair was empty, I was alone with my emotions. Not quite alone, though, for on the table lay the embroidered headcloth. In his diaries Lockett relates how he later several times met this man in India, sometimes together with other members of the Theosophical Society. But it was this exceptional experience that made him decide to devote his life to theosophy. To his very skeptical friend Mr. Ray O. Hume he tried to explain his decision in a letter September 30, 1881, I would never have taken anybody's evidence to so astounding a claim as the existence of the brothers, but required personal experience before I would head the new movement. I got that proof in due time.